On this episode of Aviator Cast, we talk to Corey Scow, a corporate pilot, flight instructor, and content creator.
Welcome, aviators, to another episode of Aviator Cast. Load up your flight bag with useful flight training topics, interviews, and aviation passion. Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Coming to you from Angle of Attack Headquarters in Homer, Alaska, here's your host and flight instructor, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, aviators, to another episode of Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer from Angle of Attack. I have a small flight school here in Homer, Alaska. Do lots of online content. That's why you're watching or listening to this podcast, Aviator Cast. Today, we've got a special guest with us. His name is Corey Scow. Really interesting story of corporate flying. So if you think that maybe the corporate side of flying is something that you're interested in rather than airlines or any other type of aviation career, this is a really illustrative story of how people move up in the corporate flying world. Corey's in a great position now. I think he probably always has been having a good time, sometimes harder than others, but in a really good position now and really loving his job. So I think it's good for those of you that are thinking of doing something like that to hear his story. He's also a great content creator. So we'll be talking about his Instagram and his YouTube as well. And you can check him out there. But before we get to that, remember that if you subscribe and turn on notifications and comment on this episode on YouTube, you'll be entered to win a t-shirt or a hat from Angle of Attack. I'll just be drawing that randomly. You can also enter, very importantly, by reviewing on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, one of those, where leaving a review and me reading that review on the show will enter you to win that. So I'm just kind of collecting those right now, and then I'm going to start to randomly be selecting people and sending those out. So I really appreciate that. So let's get right into it. Let's get into do a little bit of a chat here with Corey and learn about his aviation story. All right, everybody, we have a very special guest with us today. We have Corey Scow with us. How you doing, Corey?
Good. Good to be with you.
So we were kind of just joking because you and I actually haven't talked a lot before, like off air, like just some Instagram messages back and forth. But we have kind of at least an interesting connection. We both went to the same school. You're still living around that area. And tell people about what you do and where you're from.
Yeah, so right now I work for a company called Cache Valley Electric. We're based in Logan, Utah, home of Utah State University, where I'm also a part-time flight instructor. I grew up in Seattle and Denver and came out to Utah State 3 weeks after I graduated, went through their summer program out here, got my license, and then took a few years off, got back into it, and finished up, graduated 2008, and I've been in corporate flying since 2010. That's kind of the short story version of my career so far.
The elevator pitch, I like
that's
it.
That's right.
Very cool. So let's go back to the very beginning. How did you connect with aviation? How did you fall in love with it? What were those earlier memories that you had?
Yeah, well, growing up in Seattle, there was a lot of trips to Boeing Field, the Museum of Flight, and that's where it started. There's a big fair up there. I think they call it Sea Fair. We'd go see the Blue Angels perform, and it was that's where the bug really started. My grandpa owned a Cessna Cardinal when I was a little kid as well. And so he was a pilot. My dad was into aviation. The Lego airplanes, I mean, all that stuff. My best gift was the Lego airport when I was 8 years old. I still remember that. and then it kind of cooled off, when we moved to Colorado. I kind of got into some other things, and it wasn't until I picked up Microsoft Flight Simulator 2000 that I discovered, oh, I could actually get paid for this. This is a lot of fun. Why don't I pursue this? And it was like, I'm not kidding, it was February of my senior year. I was already committed to go to Colorado State. I was going to be in their engineering program. And then we found Utah State University. And my grandma lived down south a little bit in Salt Lake area. So I thought, okay, I could go there. And I fell in love with Logan. This whole valley up here is just beautiful. It's great country. Decided, hey, they had a summer program. So I was like, wait, I can graduate high school and 3 weeks later start flight training. Like, sign me up. And that's where the passion started. you know, flight simulators and visiting museums like a lot of you guys do.
Yeah. And honestly, it is pretty similar for me. Like flight simulators were a big part of my early love for aviation. And I used to do World War II models and even blow them up sometimes, but like you, like I never really connected it. Like the dots really never connected that it was an actual career until it came time to think about a career.
Yeah.
And then my cousin, who was a few years ahead of me, he started to go to Utah State and he was in the professional pilot program. For some reason, like the light bulb went off. It's like, you don't have to be a military pilot to be in aviation. So that was it, man. Like from there, I mean, it was just, you know, all efforts toward that. So that's really cool.
Yeah. The bug is real. When you get the bug, it doesn't leave you.
For sure. Yeah. It's still there. I'm sure it's the same for you. So what was it about, Utah State specifically that when you were like in that hard transition, which is interesting that you're already signed up at Colorado State, that just kind of tore you away from, I guess, that previous plan. And it maybe this dovetails into their program and why it's actually pretty special. I really enjoyed my time there, so I think it's worth talking about.
Yeah, you know, it was the way I was treated up here. You know, it's Logan and Utah State are constantly rated very high in the, you know, the quality of life and campus metrics that you may find from different publications. And I felt that firsthand very right off the bat when I came up here. They treated me very well. They took me on a discovery flight. And I just fell in love kind of with the area. And then as we toured campus, it just felt right, you know, and it helped too, knowing that I wasn't too far away, because I was also looking at North Dakota and Embry-Riddle down in Prescott. Those are my other two choices. So it kind of came down to being close to family too. I had other cousins and stuff that were down in Provo going to school. And so that, you know, that played a little factor in it, but it's mostly just the campus environment and the community up here. I fell in love with it.
So you chose to go into the college route, which a lot of people obviously choose to go like part 61 versus 141. So why don't you speak for a minute to the college experience or I guess university in this case, of going through like a professional pilot program, what it's like, process everything. Just start to take us through it. What was your experience like at Utah State?
Yeah. Well, you know, I taught when I did my flight instructing, I actually taught part 61. So I have seen firsthand both avenues and how they differ. Mm. Going the university or college route was nice because you were surrounded by a group of like-minded individuals. They had the structure that it made it very easy to transition to a larger airplane or a professional environment. Everything was geared towards that. You were treated that way. The professors and instructors were geared that way. You had resources from SkyWest that we were able to basically get a lot of their training right to us. And so it helps if you really want to go to an airline or a professional cockpit, having that campus college environment was great. Just the college experience, going to football games and basketball games was great. Mm-hmm. And all that extra was certainly nice to have as well.
Yeah, and Utah State is, people are pretty eager about the sports there. Really decent basketball team that sometimes gets in the March Madness. The football team, it's fun. Like, they're not super good, but it's fun. It's such a good area. Talk to people about, this is interesting, it's becoming a commercial for Utah State, but it's fine. Like, it's great. And I like my memories of it too, but talk to people about kind of the local setup, what it's like, other activities people can do alongside, say, going to school there. Maybe even like life in Logan and life like going to Beaver Mountain or whatever to go snowboarding, stuff like that. Like what other stuff is there to do in Logan other than flying?
Yeah, well, it's a country town. I wouldn't call it a suburb of Salt Lake. A lot of people don't quite understand where it is. Cache Valley, the county where Logan is really its lone little community, and really it's a bubble. Growing up in Denver and being a suburb of Denver, and even in Seattle, we were there. You know, I'm a city kid at heart, but this is country, and you've got, you know, we have season passes to snowboard 15 minutes from my door, you know, at a nice little resort up there. Then Beaver Mountain's an hour away, which is a little bigger. Lots of snowmobiling. I got a lot of friends that have sleds and are way into that. But it's just beautiful. My wife and I were just out riding our little, you know, bird scooters around and just taking in the mountains and the backcountry roads. And I mean, it's just beautiful up here. You feel away from everything. But then when you're also on campus, there's a great close-knit community. And so just plenty of activities going on up there if you're in school. I mean, there's a reason I moved back from Ohio to come here. It's just, there's so much outdoors, good people, country living that it's hard to get away from.
It's interesting in retrospect now, kind of fast forwarding and looking at your three different options to go to UND, Embry-Riddle, or Utah State. I mean, it's clear what you would have done, but does it seem like even a better decision now with just how different that experience is compared to the others?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and who knows, I probably would have loved going to UND or, you know, Riddle down in Arizona, but I know that this was the right decision for me. And people DM me all the time, what flight school should I choose? And it really, to me, comes down to, where do you feel comfortable? You have to go visit these places and get a feel for them. And if you don't feel right there, then don't do it.
I get a question all the time. It's like, what's the best flight school in the US? It's like, let's talk about state first and like part of the state next. Like there are lots and lots of good flight schools. It really boils down to the instructors. So let's talk about your specific experience at Utah State, kind of rewinding the clock and thinking about what it was like to go through a program like that. What were your instructors like? What was the progression like through your ratings, et cetera?
Yeah. You know, I started and I got my private in 8 weeks and it was great. We flew every day. Their summer program is really good if you stay up on it and study and can fly often. And then like I said, I took a little break, but came back and somebody helped me get up to speed again. I did a flight review and finished up. They called it like the intermediate flying. It was like the 50 hours across country or whatever you need for your instrument rating.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. Finished that up. Had a great instructor for that. Carrie Sparks, Carrie Webb now, she was great. And then, my first instructor, Forrest Webb, too. If he hears this, just want to shout him out. He was great. And then
I've heard that name somewhere.
Yeah, he was there around the time you were there. He was good. He's doing corporate now as well. And then my next instructor was a guy named Brody Warnes, who's, I think, at Delta now. And he was fabulous. And I had him all the way from my instrument, commercial, multi. And then he got hired at SkyWest right as I started my CFI. And then I was lucky for my CFI. I actually had a SkyWest pilot that was doing some part-time stuff up there. John Tunnell, great guy. We got that done. And so, you know, they were all career. I mean, like I said, all these guys are professional aviators now. I learned something a little different from everyone. So it was great that I had different instructors, but I was also fortunate that I had really good instructors. And most instructors up here really care. You know, and if you ever fly with somebody that you feel like this just isn't working, don't feel bad to change it up. Sometimes, you know, it just doesn't work. So, you know, I got lucky, but some people have to mix up their instructors and that happens too.
Was there any particular difficult time in your training where you just ran up against blocks and it took extra effort to get through?
My CFI was tough. I'd cruise through my instrument and commercial and my multi, and I got to CFI. And it was 2007. So for those of you who don't remember, like the airlines were just taking guys 250 hours, wet commercial tickets and hiring them right up. So there was a lull there where I didn't have an instructor and it was hard. And CFI is just, it is kind of a difficult license to get. And so going through that, I hit a roadblock and I failed my CFI initially. And that hurt. And then I went back and I actually failed it again for something else. So you know, it happened and it really kind of got me down.
Yep.
But it ended up working out because in the time that I had failed my CFI, the flight school across the street was actually hiring people and he was paying salary, which was more than the university was making. And he paid for my multi-engine instructor and I got a lot of free multi-time out of it. So,
nice.
You know, people will hear like, oh, I got set back and this is frustrating, but they can also lead to good things as well if you have any trials like that.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. And the reason I asked that question is because invariably every pilot has an answer to that question where they had to figure it out. And it sounds like you did.
Yeah.
So where did things go from there? So were you actually instructing in Logan at that point at the FBO? Is that where you were instructing?
Yeah, I just taught at the FBO, Leading Edge Aviation up here. That's where I did it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then let's see, where does life go from there?
So, after doing that for about almost 2 years, a year and a half to 2 years full time, my boss called me out of the blue. It was my wife's birthday and I'd taken the day off. Actually, I said, I don't want any work. I need the day off to kind of clear my head. He calls me three times and I don't answer it. Finally, I call him back and I'm like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, hey, do you want to fly a Citation? It's like, oh no, I hope I didn't screw that up. I hope we didn't give it to somebody else now.
Yeah.
And, I was like, yeah, what do I got to do? So he says, well, call this guy. And I called him a guy named Dale Moulton, who was the chief pilot of a company out of Salt Lake. And I sat right seat in their Citation Encore. They were checked out single pilot, so they didn't need, an SIC legally. He could fly it. So I was pretty much there just to talk on the radios and, for appearances, insurance, that kind of thing. And I did a 3-day trip with him. And on the end of the third day, he says, all right, go ahead and send a bill into, this person for this much. And I was like, wait, bill? Like, I thought I was doing this for fun. So I had no idea I was getting paid. And from there, Dale was also a Utah State grad. And we got along really well. He was like a second dad to me. Huge mentor influence in my life. Stuck his neck out for me a lot to help me move up in that company, eventually get hired full time a year later when they bought a TBM 850. And, from there, the TBM became a Phenom 100 a year later. And then the Citation became a Falcon 50. The Falcon became a Challenger 300. And then,
jeez.
And then the Challenger, they sold it and they went down to a Phenom 300. So they have the Phenom 300 and the 100. And the schedule was really difficult. So we ended up looking at other jobs, found this one in Ohio where I started the vlog, flying the Challenger 300, and did that for a couple years and came back here now. That's where I'm at. So that's kind of the quick version of my progression in corporate aviation.
So all I can think of as you went through that is like living at flight safety the entire time. So how did you actually get your training on all those different jets?
In 2013, I was at school for like 6 weeks. Cause I did my PIC type in the Falcon. Before I was just SIC. So I did my PIC, that was 2 weeks. Then I did another week in the Phenom 100 recurrent. And then at the end of the year, I did the Challenger 300 PIC. And, it was always training events twice a year, going to recurrence. It was a lot of training. You get airplanes mixed up all the time.
Exactly. Cause those are all, I think every single one of them was a different manufacturer. So they all have a slightly different philosophy. So, out of all of those, what was your favorite one to fly?
Oh, that's
or is it the one you're flying now? I have no idea.
No, I think I always tell people the Challenger still has a special place in my heart. You couldn't screw up a landing in the Challenger. It just always was butter. And a big cockpit, I'm a big guy, I'm 6'2", 230. So, it was nice, plenty of space up there. The Falcon was great though, having those three engines and hydraulic controls, it was super nice, but cockpit wasn't as nice as the Challenger.
So, what was the Challenger the nicest cockpit out of all of them?
Yeah, I think so. The Phenom 300 with the Garmin 3000 is really nice as well, though. The touch screen and the way you can customize all your screens and have your charts everywhere, that was really nice.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Okay, so you did the Ohio stint. If you don't mind, if you're not outing anyone, talk about that experience and why. I don't know. I want to rewind a little bit because you said you got burned out in Utah as well, mm-hmm. Doing all that
yeah.
corporate work. I think that's important to talk about for those that are thinking of doing that, just to be real. And then also mm-hmm. Ohio and be real there. And then and then we'll bring it back to Utah eventually. But why don't you talk about that?
Yeah. So getting burnout in Utah, there's different types. Not every corporate job is the same. And the way that this owner used the airplane was for vacation mostly. There was some business, but it was mostly vacation. So we were always out to the Bahamas or the ranch or the beach house in San Diego, which I loved. I can't complain about that. But it was really hard on my wife because it would be for, you know, 5-6 days at a time, and then the schedule would change mm-hmm. and we'd get home for a day and then back for another six. So it didn't really burn me out. It was affecting our relationship, though. It was just a lot of stress. And I needed something with a more set schedule, you know. And mm-hmm. So that's why I ended up. And then when I saw that they were downsizing the airplane, we actually let a pilot go. I thought, man, I could see the writing on the wall. This is just going to get busy. That was just hard. I ended up, I was really looking at NetJets, but Jet Select in Columbus, actually, this is before I started doing any kind of social media stuff, requested to follow my personal account on Instagram. No idea who they were. So I looked into them, looked up their website, and saw that they were actually hiring street captains for Challenger 300 positions out of Columbus. And I thought, that's kind of odd, but you know, let's look into it. So I put a feeler out, an application in. They called me, Skype interview. I thought I bombed the interview because we got the time zones wrong. So I was like an hour late. My kid was crying upstairs, and it was kind of a mess, but got hired. And we moved out there and really loved it. I actually really liked there's some negatives with doing 135 charter flying, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a blast. Mm-hmm. Met some really cool people. The schedule wasn't perfect, but it was better. We had a 14 on call, 7 off. And in that 14 days, they would bring the airplane back to base quite a bit. So it wasn't like I was gone the full 14 days, which we kind of thought going into it, that's what it would be.
That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were some times, you know, it was like 10, 11 days and 12 maybe, but, some of those nights you do end up getting back to base and,
that's good.
Yeah, it was. And then out of the blue, my current co-pilot, back in Logan called me, and we kind of kept in touch. I'd known him before. He was, based in Logan previously. And at the time he was flying for another company, and called me up and said, hey, there might be this job opening at Cache Valley Electric. And I think I'm going to take one of the spots. If you want to come fly with me, let me know. And I sat on that for like 3 days before I said anything to my wife, because I don't want to open that can of worms. And we'd only been out in Ohio for about 2 years. And I thought, man, we just got settled here. Everything's good. I like my job. Do I really want to move back? And finally decided, we love Cache Valley. It's closer to family. Let's go back there. And that's ended up why we ended up coming back here.
So where is her family from? Are they from that area too?
She grew up in Salt Lake, and her mom actually ended up passing away like a year after we moved back. So in some ways it was good that we were back and closer, and she was able to, you know, spend a little more time with her instead of be so far away. And that's kind of her story. So yeah, we're closer there. My folks are still in Denver, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean that's all really positive. It's kind of amazing how things work out sometimes with like that perfect situation. I think aviation's like that a lot of the times, though. Yeah. It's like people really need to pay attention to the friendships and the networking they do, because and it really helps out in a university setting, because you get to know a lot of people, and a lot of people are going through the program, so there's quite a few connections there. But that's typically where your future career will happen, is those initial connections. So may not even be about the best school as much as it is the best connections. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if I look at my jobs, I got this one here because I knew somebody. My first one was because I knew somebody. You know, I didn't know anybody out in Ohio, but 2 out of 3. I mean, it's about who you know. And I did try, when I was out there, I'd even kind of tried putting some feelers out, looking at some other companies, and I didn't know anybody. It was hard to get my foot in the door, because anytime a position came open, they hired one of their buddies. And
right.
So it is who you know.
So you came back to Logan, flying for Cache Valley. How long have you been doing that?
I've been back with them now almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years this summer.
Okay. So it's been a bit. Cool. What are you flying with them?
We have a Citation XLS Plus, which is a great airplane. It's, it's Citation. People make fun of it because it's slow, but it does. It's actually a great job for us. Does a great job for what we need it to be. It's got an APU, which is great. I can't complain.
Nice. Yeah, that's real nice. So what's your, what's your lifestyle, pilot lifestyle like now? What's your schedule like? What are your flights typically like? What's it like to share the workload with your friend, your co-pilot, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So, now it's because it's mostly business. Most of our flying is done during the week, which is great. So I'm home most weekends, which is very new for my wife. She loves it. there's occasional like Saturday or Sunday, they have a home outside of the state. So, there's occasional trips there, but, it doesn't affect us that much. I know my schedule may be about a week out in advance what I'm doing, but I can plan on kind of knowing something will maybe happen, Tuesday to Thursday. And, so it's a lot more predictable. It's a lot more mellow. I commute 10 minutes to work, which is great. It's working with, it's just me and my co-pilot, Chad, and he has a lot of experience running flight departments. He handles a lot of that stuff. I kind of take care of the back end stuff, the flight planning and getting hotels and rental cars and some of those things.
Nice.
We try and split cleaning the airplane. That's something a lot of people don't realize that corporate pilots have to do, we gotta,
it's all up to you guys.
Do that. Yeah. So Chad's really good at cleaning though. He's fabulous at it. He's really good. He's got a little cleaning business, so he knows how to clean an airplane. I got a lot to learn from him there, but yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
So in that position, instead of doing like a gig job where you're getting paid per hour, I'm assuming you're on some sort of salary. You've got benefits, the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah. I feel like we're treated almost as if we were, I was taken the right way, like executive level, like management maybe. I don't feel like we're like peons or, I feel like we're, treated very well in the company and have benefits and salary and all that. So it's nice.
So it's interesting because your original job in Utah, which I'm assuming was Part 91. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Part 91, like an owner, and you get to basically fly on their whim and you're probably still doing Part 91 now. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
But there's a big disparity there, or can be a big disparity with different types of corporate jobs. So you can have people that, maybe not willfully, but you can have situations where you don't feel like you're treated so well and you're just getting run through the ringer. And then somewhere like in your current position where it's like, you kind of feel like part of the crew and part of the family. And like, this is something you could do for decades,
Yeah. My first job, we were treated very well. It was just demanding. They'd pay for us. We go to, baseball games and, got to go to the Daytona 500 and all this stuff, and they paid for it. And so that was like, golfed. So much golf, but it was demanding. So there was the trade. I was the trade-off, I guess, but here it's more laid back.
And it seems like everything in its season too, right? Like people in aviation, they've got to put in their work to be able to get what they want to get.
Yeah.
There are very few situations where you just get like handed the keys to do your dream job. It's very rare.
Yep.
It sounds like you definitely went through a lot of that, to get to where you're at now, where it's like, everything's good. Yeah. Wife is happy. you love where you work. The schedule's pretty good. Yeah. You're not too worn out. So let me take like a really like random tangent. And let's talk about like fatherhood, okay?
Yeah.
And being a father and being a pilot. So how have you learned to balance that in your life? Because obviously, I know a little bit of your background because of a connection we have, but so I know it's probably very important to you. How do you make sure that you're a good father too through all this flying?
I'm still learning. I'll just say that.
Yeah, no kidding.
I haven't figured it out yet. But when things are going well, what I do realize is that when I'm home, you know, when I try and put that stuff away. And you know, sometimes it feels like there's like a transition period. When you get home from a trip, you almost need like a day to kind of break it up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, okay, like you guys are getting used to me, I'm getting used to you. And then in the next day, it just kind of gels again, finding your place. They've all got routines. You know, so you try and play with them. I mean, I love my kids and I got great kids. And so, being present when you're home, it's nice that I can leave work and I don't have to bring it home with me. So that helps.
So from there, like you're obviously doing your thing right now. You're having a good time. Like sounds like you're kind of maybe set for a little bit in terms of where you want to be. So you're also doing instruction on the side at Utah State. So here's my question. Like we can talk about Utah State a little bit more in your instruction time, but who is Corey Scow when you show up as a student? Like what kind of instructor are you? How do you present yourself? How do you bring a student through? What's your style?
I don't try and intimidate anybody. I try and let the guard down and let the student feel comfortable. You know, I don't know. I really love teaching. So I hope that enthusiasm comes through. I'm not trying to trick anybody. I'm not trying to, fail anybody or not to get anyone or make anyone feel bad. I want people to leave when they've had instruction through me or had a stage check. I want them to come away with a good feeling like, yeah, I love aviation. I'm going to keep doing this. And I want them to come away with something. Hey, like he gave me a really solid pointer. That's something I can actually apply that I can take with me for a while. You know, like I feel like I'm just, I hope that's what I try and, you know, come across as, I guess.
Are you still enjoying the days where you do like first solos and check rides, all that stuff? Like what's that process for you now that you've been doing it a while?
Most of my instructing is in the twin, for the students that I have. So I'm flying a twin star, which is great. And then, other than that, I'm doing stage checks. So I haven't had like a first solo. I did send one of my multi-students on a check ride and that was nerve wracking. It brought back all the feels, you know, do I have all the endorsements? Has he had everything ready to go? That was fun. I did that a couple months ago and he passed because I was like, okay, good. It just, you know, brought it all back. But, I still love it. It's still a lot of fun to see people succeed in aviation.
Do you guys still go up to Preston Airport and do short field stuff there?
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot of Preston, Brigham City's not really short, but we go down to Brigham City a lot. All the cross country is to Pocatello.
Yep, dude. First solo cross country. That's where
I went. That's right. Yep.
Over the Malad VOR.
Malad still there.
Yep. Downey too. So Downey's interesting. Have you ever landed there?
Yeah, it's got the little like jog in the runway there. And oh yeah.
Yeah. Little turn in the runway. It's pretty interesting. So let's pivot a little bit now. And cause like I saw, I'm not sure it was on YouTube or IGTV. You were starting to do some videos, but, you're starting to like take this background, this experience that you have, and you're sharing it on social media / YouTube. So tell people about that and what you're doing.
Yeah. So, started in Ohio. I was actually at a point in my career where I was like, I need to have another skill. I can't just be a pilot. Like what if something happens? I need to develop something. So I was actually looking at starting an aerial photography business and was going to start flying drones and doing real estate and see where that went. I ended up finding a Casey Neistat video, where he was talking about his Phantom 4 down in South Africa. And I realized, oh wait, no one's really doing it like that in aviation. And there's probably a reason, but I was like, I'm gonna try that. So I got a little GoPro session, a little square box one, and just started recording. And as it kind of evolved, I thought, you know, what's the show I would want to watch as a student pilot? That's kind of my target audience. I thought,
yeah,
you know, how can I peel the curtain back? If this was a virtual job shadow, how would I take somebody along that was interested in corporate aviation and kind of peel it back a little bit and show them inside the layers of what we do beyond just, you know, taking off and landing and what's the behind the scenes like, you know, the hotels and trips and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of my vision and my mindset when I'm on my game creating, I guess. And you know, it's kind of evolved and you know, took off in a way that I didn't expect. And here we are and still growing, still having fun with it. I don't do it as much now because, you know, I try and, you know, respect the privacy of the company I'm flying for, you know, where I'm flying more of the same people now. Before it was all random people and no one really knew. And so it wasn't as big a deal. Now I try and rein it in a little bit, but there's still things I can show and trips I do. And just trying to, like I say, provide that virtual job shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, there's honestly not a ton of that in your space. I don't know if it is because of the privacy issue, but I just feel like I can think of a couple guys on YouTube, like Captain Moonbeam is a guy that I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Like he does a good job, but
I'd love
he doesn't
to fly
get as much
you.
Love as he deserves.
No, he doesn't.
You have got the flight with him?
No, I'd say I'd love to. We, you know, it's funny because we've flown. I mean, he went from a Citation to the Challenger and I went from the Challenger to the Citation. And, you know, I've flown through his home base before, but he, you know, just hasn't met up yet, but yeah, he's a great guy. I like Jim.
And it, you know, I was talking to a friend about it a little bit ago. It's cool how we're in this stage in aviation because it certainly wasn't like this when I started. There just wasn't like this social media, large network support where you could find people all over the nation to just like bounce ideas off of or collaborate with or get encouragement from. And so I think in a lot of ways, I've said that it's like a renaissance in aviation right now where we get to have all that because it wasn't there before. And it was pretty hard to just buy the Jepson textbooks and like, that's all you got. And you got your ground school and so on. So it's kind of different. Yeah. You and I were talking a little bit before, maybe something that's relevant to today, because when you were instructing or when you went through your flight training is around the 2007, 2008 timeframe. We know that there was a recession at that time. I think there's something facing us now. There obviously is something facing us now. We don't know the extent to which it will affect the aviation market. Like we're all just trying to live day to day pretty much right now. It's Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
So, talk to us about that process and like, the mentality or I guess the encouragement a pilot could need during a time like this to just like keep going, because at least from my perspective, it will come out the other end at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I had a friend that was into flight school and all that happened back in 2008 and quit. And he's still in aviation as an air traffic controller, but you know, he messaged me recently and was like, "Hey, what do you think? Like, should I do it?" And you know, he misses it. And the sad thing is I know people in this time will say, "You know what? I'm just going to hang it up. I don't think it's for me." And my advice is if you love it, if you're, you know, people don't understand the term passion. Passion actually means like to like something like suffer. You know, like, and so if you would suffer for aviation, if you would be willing to go through some hard times to do something like this, that's amazing. There's nothing like flying an airplane. Then stick it out and don't give up on it, because I still instructed during the recession. We actually grew the flight school, believe it or not. And I had a few career students that are all working for airlines now. And they did their training while the recession was going on. And when the recession was over, they were able to get jobs and it all worked out for them. So stick it out. Yeah, you might have a year or two, I don't know, setback because of this. But like it goes back to that suffering. If you love it so bad, don't give up on it, because it'll get better. And all the good times make the rough times worth it.
So true. And it goes through like different, it might even be on like a 10-year cycle, to be honest. Like we're right at that 10-year cycle because there was 2001 and all of that. 2000, like really the 2008 recession didn't, at least for me and what I noticed, didn't really hit until 2010. Like that's when everything started to hurt bad. Mm-hmm. And then now we have this, which is just like an outlier. Like what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
And people that have been in the industry a while, and I guess even I'm in that category, even though I'm only been in it 16 years, but it seems like yesterday being at Utah State, you know, you got to ride the wave. Like you just got to figure it out and keep pushing your way through. And that's just how it is, you know?
Yeah. Don't give up on it. It, like you said, it's cyclical and there'll be good times and bad and just ride the wave.
So if you were going to, just as like a more encouraging words to kind of finish up here, if you're going to give encouraging words to someone that's just starting aviation today and maybe even like put aside like the virus stuff and just like starting aviation today, like what would your words of advice be for a student? Someone that's passionate, someone that did Lego airplanes, right? And they're ready, like they're ready to go. What do they do?
I would say have fun with it. There will be times when flight training isn't fun and doing maneuvers over and over again, or maybe you get sick at first. You know, I know some people, it takes them a few flights to get their, you know, legs under them, I guess, and get their flight stomach figured out. But just have fun, enjoy the journey. Every flight puts you one step closer to where you want to be. And find ways to make it fun, but also like start if you know what you want to do, if you want to be a professional aviator, then start training like a professional aviator. Show up, be ready to go, take it seriously. You can have fun and be serious and take things seriously. Yep. I don't think people understand that. Some people are way extreme the other way on one side. And you can do both. You can be prepared, but still enjoy what you're doing and have fun. And I would say find that balance. It may take you a little bit, but work on finding that balance between professionalism and having fun and enjoying what you do.
It's funny. Every time I ask that question, it's always like hard work. It's going to be fun, but it's hard work.
That's right. It's true.
Yep. It's very true. All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for joining us today. And where can people find your stuff if they want to look at you, find you online?
Yeah. So you can search Pilot Vlogs on YouTube or youtube.com/pilotvlogsofficial or on Instagram and Facebook. I'm at Real Captain Corey. That's Cory. And it's all no spaces or anything in that. Real Captain Corey. That's kind of where I hang out. DMs are open. On Instagram. So if you have questions about corporate aviation, happy to answer those for you there. And stay tuned to the vlog, I guess. There's more episodes coming.
All right, man. Well, hey, appreciate it. And take care during this time. It sounds like you're doing great.
Yeah, good chatting with you. Thank you very much.
And to you. Thanks, Corey. Okay, huge thanks to Corey for joining us today. I know that it's kind of a crazy busy time right now with the kids all at home and a little bit wild here with our quarantine and our isolation and our stay-at-home orders, whatever they're calling them there in Utah. So really cool, just typical aviation story of working hard, going to school, getting it all done, instructing people, working your way up through different jobs and getting to that job that just really kind of resonates. So really, really cool to learn that story that Corey has. And wish him the best luck. And you can go follow him or subscribe to him on YouTube at Pilot Vlogs. And you can also find him on Instagram, as he just said, Real Captain Corey. So thanks again, Corey, for being on the show and really appreciate it. You guys can find more material from me on YouTube. You can subscribe there. This podcast is also obviously on iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify and all those. And if you leave a review there or subscribe, then you'll be entered to win a t-shirt or a hat. This is one of my hats from Angle of Attack. All right. Just as a kind of a thank you to those of you in the community, I want to just be like giving away more of them now. They are for sale, but giving away more of them just to thank you guys for all you do and for being involved. If you need like ground school or you need check ride preparation, I call it Check Ride Ace. We have that at my website, angleofattack.com. You can check it out there. Hope you guys are doing well during this time. You're happy, healthy, and well. And I will talk to you soon. All right. Have a good one and throttle on.
We sincerely thank you for joining us on Aviator Cast. Please subscribe through your favorite podcast service and leave a review. Check out more flight training resources at angleofattack.com. There you can find this podcast, many free aviation training videos, as well as online ground school for private instrument, commercial, and CFI. Got a check ride coming up? Checkride Ace from Angle of Attack is your ultimate companion, guiding you through the process so you can conquer your big day. Thanks once again for joining us on Aviator Cast. Turn left, contact Ground Point Niner.